This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Headaches are among the most common complaints that doctors hear, and they come in a number of varieties and intensities. On the lower end of the scale, there are garden variety headaches caused by God knows what and generally cured by a couple of aspirin. There's the throbbing must get to bed now headache, and then there are migraines. Millions of Americans suffer intense, debilitating pain, often accompanied by nausea and hallucinations. Migraines can be difficult to treat, and some people have decided to give in and accept them as a fact of their life. We'll hear from a couple of those sufferers, and we'll talk with a migraine specialist, and we want to hear from you. How do you cope with migraines? Does your family understand? Your coworkers? Your boss? Tell us your story. Our number is at 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later on in the program, we'll talk with Michael Yan, a writer and photographer who spent most of the past 3 years embedded with U.S. forces in Iraq. But first, migraine headaches. The New York Times is currently hosting a migraine blog on its website. Among the contributors is novelist Siri Hustvedt, and she joins us now from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you for having me.
And I believe you've coined a new noun, migraineur.
Actually, it exists in the medical literature. I didn't make it up.
You didn't make it up, but what do you mean by it?
I mean, I chose to use that word, that is an actual word, because it identifies the person who has the headache very closely with the headache itself. It's a little like saying someone's an epileptic rather than saying you have epilepsy.
So it's someone who is, it's part of your life. It's part of who you are.
Exactly. And I do think that some of the perceptual changes, and even once I had a Lilliputian hallucination, I saw very small people, pink people, before a migraine. That this is very much part of my inner life and imaginative life as well.
When was the last time you had a migraine?
Oh, not so long ago, just a few days ago.
And how did you treat it?
I learned to do something called biofeedback, which is very much like meditation, but they hook you up to a machine, and the more tense you are, the louder the machine beeps. And over time, I learned to relax, and through very deep relaxation, it's possible to make the pain better. Not necessarily take it away, but take the terrible edge off of it.
And light causes you problems? Do you have to go into a dark room?
Usually, the fact is that when I'm in pain, almost every kind of sensory stimulus is painful. And I think many migraineurs have that.
And I wonder, how often do you get them?
Well, it depends. I've had two major headaches, one that lasted for 8 months and another that lasted for a year. Those are my great debilitating migraines. I ended up the second time in the hospital on an antipsychotic, Thorazine. And it actually did not help. So I checked myself out 2 days earlier. I was there for 8 days. And that was when I did the last resort treatment, which was biofeedback.
And it works to the degree that it takes the edge off.
It takes the edge off. And I think that, you know, tension is a physiological state, and so is relaxation. And I did begin to understand that being angry and upset and distressed about the pain, which is, I think, a very normal response, was actually exacerbating the pain.
You also write in your blog, though, that periods of obsessive and highly productive writing and reading that give me immense pleasure are often followed by a neurological crash, a headache.
Yes, I think it's true. And because I've lived with this so long, I've begun to understand that perhaps it is a kind of penance, and that it's simply part of my internal cycle, both neurological and emotional. So I've come to embrace this as part of who I am and not fight it.
And not fight it. As you say, this is not an American story. Americans like stories of people who fight on despite all the odds.
Yes, a friend sent me a note and said she had read the piece, and her comment was that it was rather like Buddhism. And I do think that there is an aspect to her comment that's correct. I just think that even in my own body, this kind of acceptance and not fighting, accepting that you have this problem and it probably will never go away, has had a very good salutary effect even on the headaches themselves.
And what effect does it have on your life, on day-to-day tasks as you go about your business?
Well, I think that I know that it could come, and when I have an aura, and I have several different kinds, lights, sometimes uncontrollable yawning, supernatural exhaustion, and then I go instantly into my bedroom, lie down, and try to do very deep relaxation exercises. And then sometimes I'm sick for a few days.
It makes it difficult to schedule things, doesn't it?
It can. I'm lucky because I'm a writer and I work at home. So I can write around my headache, so to speak.
We're talking with Siri Hustvedt, a novelist and author who suffers from migraines and blogs about it for the New York Times. How does it affect your life? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Chuck is on the line. Chuck calling us from Hilton Head in South Carolina.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I've been suffering from migraines since I was about 17. And there's a couple of things I was going to say. One is that I agree completely about the relaxation technique. One of the good things that you can say about getting migraines is that you do get this visual aura first. So you know the thing is coming, and that gives me a chance to, like the person that's on the air now is saying, to get into a dark room and lie down, and try as hard as you can to relax, because I think getting tense or trying to stay active when this thing is coming is not ever going to work.
And what line of work are you in, Chuck?
That's the other thing I was going to say. I'm a musician. We were talking about scheduling. Hmm. I'm a jazz musician and a touring musician. And, of course, there are times when these things come at very inopportune moments where I have to perform. And I have had to perform maybe a couple of times, not when it's at its peak, but let's say I've been lucky in the sense that maybe it happened 4 or 5 hours before the show, and I was able to get a few hours. People are usually understanding when you say, hey, I'm getting a migraine, although a lot of people don't know exactly what that means. They are understanding about it, so they'll let me, you know, get away from the sound check or the rehearsal, go lie down, and try to get myself as together as I can in time to perform. But I'll tell you, it's a pretty, excuse my language, pretty hellish experience to be up there playing when that's going on.
And do people understand if you miss a note or sit out when you shouldn't have?
Well, I don't know if the audience does, but my fellow musicians certainly do. They know what I'm going through. So it's just a matter of it's really pain management and trying to, accept it. I think that's a really correct assessment of it, that, you know, I've had these things off and on for so many years that I've accepted that it is. When it comes, I know how I deal with it, and I think I don't believe in taking, there's, I guess, preventative, or these kind of pills that you can take on a regular basis that they say will prevent you from getting them. But I'm sort of an anti-pill person. I try to do it in as natural a way and deal with it when it comes and not be on a regular medication.
I just wanted to ask you about that, Siri Hustvedt. On regular medication, you said, well, yeah, sometimes it can help sometimes, but there are side effects and there's a trade-off there.
Yes, I actually, nothing worked for me. No pharmacological agent ever worked for me. So then after I stopped looking for a cure, I just haven't taken any drugs. And everyone's a cup of coffee, caffeine is actually, can be good for warding off a headache, interestingly enough. It's been used for many, many years.
Some people, it's a trigger.
I think it's quite rare that it's a trigger because caffeine is, I believe, a vasoconstrictor, and there is a certain kind of swelling in the vascular system. So I think usually caffeine is pretty good for migraines.
Okay. Well, Chuck, thank you very much for your time. Good luck.
My pleasure.
And Siri Hustvedt, thank you for sharing your story with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Siri Hustvedt, a novelist who suffers from migraines and blogs about it for the New York Times Migraine Blog, with us from our bureau in New York. And joining us now from the University of Michigan News Service is Dr. Joel Saper. He's founder and director of the Michigan Head Pain and Neurological Institute. And Dr. Saper, nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you very much.
And I wonder, those first two stories, well, they must sound awfully familiar to you.
They're very common. That's right, Neil.
And is it wise, do you think, for migraine sufferers to say, look, I have to learn how to live with this. I might as well accept it as part of who I am.
Well, I think there's a certain part of acceptance that's reasonable. Certainly, it's not a curable disorder, meaning we can't do something and it goes away forever. But it is a controllable disorder for most individuals. Now, perhaps Siri and the other caller are exceptions to the case. I don't know the details of their treatments.
Sure.
Or the many medicines they might have tried. But most people with intermittent migraine, and even those who have daily migraine, and some people have that, usually we can find something that controls the pain to the extent that their life normalizes.
So this is something when that aura that we heard Siri talk about, when that comes on, they can take something and it will prevent it or ameliorate it?
Well, it depends. Now, some people have just intermittent headaches. In other words, they have many normal days, and then they have, as I think Siri described, varying lengths of duration of severe headaches. And if we know when those are coming, there's sometimes treatment that can preempt the onset of that headache, or once it occurs, to reverse it or reduce the pain significantly. For those people that have intermittent headaches that are unpredictable but occur frequently, we can put many people on daily medicine that can often reduce the frequency of those headaches and then treat them when they occur.
Stay with us, Dr. Saper, if you would. We're going to continue talking about migraine headaches in just a moment, their signs, their symptoms, their triggers, and we'll take more of your calls, 800-989-8255. You can also join the conversation on email, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. If you type migraine headache into a blog search engine, you'll be surprised at how many migraine blogs there are, people who record their daily trials with the debilitating headaches, from what triggers them to how it affects their jobs and relationships. The New York Times is hosting a migraine blog of its own. You can find a link to it on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. If you don't suffer from migraines, you can also get a sense of what a migraine aura looks like without the throbbing on the blog as well. Our guest is migraine specialist Dr. Joel Saper. He's the founder and director of the Michigan Head Pain and Neurological Institute, and we'll talk with another of the New York Times bloggers in just a moment. What's your migraine story? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And again, our blog address is npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's see if we can go to another caller. This is Valerie. Valerie on the line with us from Buffalo, New York. Valerie, are you there? I guess Valerie... I heard her there just as I hung up on her, and I apologize for that. So call back if you would, Valerie. Let's try Joe, and Joe's with us from Chico in California.
Well, thank you for bringing up this conversation. My wife is a sufferer of migraines, and what she had to go through just to find the right medication was about a three-year process because she has intermittent migraines. So the doctor would say, well, try this. You know, and we'd wait for a migraine to show up. She'd try it. It wouldn't work, or it would incapacitate her to the point where she was a zombie. And she didn't need to be that because she's a high school teacher. So it made it difficult for her. We finally found something that worked for her. But then after all the insurance costs were factored, we ended up having to pay $64 a pill. So it became, you know, a financial burden as much as it was a physical burden.
$64 a pill, Dr. Saper, is that unusual?
Well, some of the medicines, I'm not sure which drug he's referring to, some of the medicines can be pricey. I'm not sure I know one that's $64 a pill, however. But I know that there are some anti-nauseants that are very expensive. But in terms of actual migraine drugs, I'm not aware of one that's that's pricey. Mm-hmm. Is that pricey?
And the experience of, well, let's try this one, let's try that one, that seems to be a common story.
Well, it is an issue. Migraine is a brain biological disorder, and migraine is an inherited condition more often than not. And in women, migraine is often linked to the influence of estrogen. Estrogen in a woman will make the brain biology that the individual is predisposed to have, will make it much more likely that headaches will be manifest and manifest frequently. Now, when the attacks come on, different people respond differently. We haven't figured that out, Neil. Mm. We do know someday when we can understand the human genome and focus in on migraine and focus in on pathways to develop the headache, we'll have better, very specific treatments. But to the extent that we have knowledge now, there is some trial and error to finding the right treatment.
Has new technology in terms of PET scans and fMRI, that sort of thing, is that... shed any light on migraines?
Sheds a lot of light. We know there are certain areas of the brain that are active during a migraine. Some of those areas are promoting the headache, and some of the areas are the brain's own effort to turn off the headache. And, of course, we're trying to maximize value by stimulating those areas that are trying to turn off the headache, so we use the body's own apparatus. And so we've learned a lot, but we haven't learned to cure the disorder, and we haven't learned to help everyone.
Here's an email from Jessica in Virginia. It's nice to be validated. I had someone tell me recently they'd never met a person with migraines until me, and I found that curious, and it was as if I had some kind of make-believe condition. I also get the manic spell beforehand and visual disturbances. Weather, menstruation, and high stress situations are definite triggers. Is there a way to simulate a migraine so people can understand it?
Well, there are medicines that can produce a migraine in some individuals. It's otherwise difficult to simulate it. Actually, in some people who are having strokes, they have what appears to be a migraine in advance of that stroke, and that's one simulation, but it's not a way to go, obviously. But unfortunately, the people that have migraines suffer in a way that many people do not otherwise understand. Mm. And I think that Siri pointed out that it's not simply the pain, and it is not simply the sensitivity to light or sound or smell or the other sensitivities that she described, but there's also an emotional change that occurs. After all, we are talking about brain changes. Siri also pointed out that she has somewhat of a creative burst prior to the onset of the headache, or she knows that after she's been very creative and active, she will often develop a headache. We think that's all due to brain chemistry, and we think that there is what we call a letdown after a certain phase of brain chemical and physiology that leads into the first days of a migraine. We call that the letdown because it's a letdown from the high period that preceded it.
Let's get another caller in. This is Gene. Gene with us from Cleveland in Ohio.
Hi, yes. I'm a professional driver, and I get migraines that are often brought on by, like, driving in whiteout conditions like today, or brought on by bright sunlight.
It's snowing there in Cleveland. Are you having a migraine right now?
Yes, I do. Fortunately, most of the time with my migraines, once I get the aura, I know that if I take aspirin or ibuprofen, I can usually ward off the extreme headaches, and another bad symptom that I get is tunnel vision, which is not good for a driver.
I was going to say, yeah, especially in whiteout conditions.
Right. So as long as I usually take ibuprofen or aspirin at the onset of the aura, I can usually avoid at least the tunnel vision.
I'm going to get off the line with you because I don't think you need the extra distraction of talking on the phone too, Gene. Please drive safely.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Joining us now from member station WBEZ in Chicago is Paula Kamen. She's a Chicago-based journalist and author of All in My Head, An Epic Quest to Cure an Unrelenting, Totally Unreasonable, and Only Slightly Enlightening Headache. Paula, nice to have you on the program today.
Hi. Thanks for having me here.
And I have to ask you, do you have a headache right now?
Yeah, I certainly do. I've actually had it since the spring of 91. So the headache and I are about to celebrate our 18th anniversary together, basically.
I'm sure you're not going to celebrate.
No, not at all.
And your condition, as I understand it, isn't quite a migraine.
Yes. yeah, there's so much confusion about that, that about 4 to 5% of the population has what I have, and that's actually termed in medicine as chronic daily headache. And that sounds like a very bland description, but it's actually pretty accurate. That's what it means, that we basically have a chronic daily headache. And for a smaller subset of that population that I count myself a part of, about 0.5 to 0.7% of the population has it all the time, just totally unremitting.
And I know we heard just from that emailer that some people find the explanation of migraines a little bit puzzling. And I know that you have even more problems. You've written about it in the blog in the New York Times that, you know, people think it's all, well, in your head.
Yeah, that psychiatric medicine in the 20th century largely is what is where headaches were treated. And the more chronic the headache, according to Freudian psychoanalysis, the more the patient, it was all in their head, that they were getting they wanted attention from it, that they were attaching themselves more to it, that it was more of an identity. That was a word used a lot. That the more chronic it is, basically, the more crazy the person is. So there's been just extreme shame and people hiding this. So it's very new to even have a public discussion about chronic daily headache.
And sometimes if you try to tell people this, have you experienced, you know, them rolling their eyes and saying, yeah, sure?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Even doctors that I have advice to patients like me to not bring your mother along, that once I did that when I wasn't I did that when I was feeling unusually bad, and then I got the chart later, and he wrote that this was obviously a case of this young woman who was single being dependent on her mother. And there's all this analysis into your gender roles and your appearance and you know, just so much that goes beyond the pain, all the psychoanalysis that happens to the more chronic patients especially.
And a little bit like Siri, who we talked with earlier, you've written in your blog that, you've figured out that there's probably no cure for this either.
Yeah, that there is management, that I still go to the neurologist twice a year and see the new product rollout, you know, that I do have some hope that there will be a better preventive. That I've tried, I've tried dozens of them, and I've had a very typical problems. That they've had really horrible side effects. You're all drugged out, or they often poop out, you know, after a month or less than a year. And so I am hoping that there will be a new medication. But in the meantime, I agree with Siri that acceptance and learning how to manage it as best I can. And dealing with a lot of the emotional pain and not resisting it and getting angry when it happens, those things all help just to get by day to day.
And your purpose in writing the blog for the Times, you wanted to deal with the alienation of of people who have your condition.
Right. Yeah. It's very uncommon to even talk about this in public. If this were 10 years ago, I think there's no way that even I would be doing it. That basically you'd be. I'm admitting to the whole world that you're a nut job. You know that you have a lot of emotional problems and you want attention, and just what I'm doing now. I'm calling some attention to myself and being on the radio. About 20 years ago, that would have been a sure diagnosis. You know that I was. You know, that there was something wrong with me psychologically.
Dr. Saper, as we mentioned earlier, headaches do come in many different varieties.
Oh, that's right. And I think what Paul is describing is what we see in many patients. She's used the number 4 to 6%. I think that's correct of the general population. We'll have often a progression from intermittent headaches of a migraine type very often to daily or almost daily headaches, and some have it 24/7, day in and day out. We're coming very close to understanding that process better. We now know that there are brain systems at work that have been sensitized and are, if you will, on autopilot. and we're looking for ways to turn off that mechanism. Much of it is biochemical, and much of it is inflammatory. And that we know that alone is leading us to hopefully develop better treatments.
Well, Paula Kamen, thanks very much, and we wish you a prompt divorce.
Thank you very much.
Paula Kamen suffers from chronic headaches and joined us today from our member station in Chicago, WBEZ. We're talking about migraines and headaches with Dr. Joel Saper. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email question from Elizabeth in Tulsa. I'm a survivor of migraines and find that positive attitude and de-stressing have helped my situation considerably. I currently take medications to prevent, another to relieve. I wonder, what did sufferers do just 100 years ago? If I didn't have the medication and a wonderful physician, I don't think I'd be able to survive. Do you know that medical history, doctor?
Well, I've heard that story many times. I'd like to focus for a minute on the point of positive attitude, if I might, Neil.
Okay.
Several of the people we've talked to have said that they've resigned themselves to living with their reality, and I think that that's healthy to an extent. But we know, for example, that the placebo response, which is that you think something's going to work and it does, we know that that's an actual biological reaction. We actually have PET scans that show certain areas of the brain that activate with positive thinking. And we know that it's therapeutic in many illnesses. It's not about being crazy or a nutcase. It's about capturing the power of the brain to remedy what might be wrong. And unless an individual with headache has enough positive reserve left in their thinking so that they can be reasonably and responsibly hopeful when they see a responsible physician who's responsibly trying to help them. Without that positivity, Neil, I think we lose a very powerful ally in trying to help many of our patients.
Let's get another caller on the line. Steve is with us, calling from Flint, Michigan.
Yeah, I used to have terrible, terrible headaches, 6 to 12 times a year. All I could do was go into a dark room, try and think nice thoughts. I thought it might be my neck, so I went to see a chiropractor. Turns out she was a nutritionist. She started asking me about caffeine. Do I drink caffeine? I'm English. All my life, we drink gallons of tea. I come to America, I drink gallons of coffee. She said, it might be that. I quit caffeine. That gave me withdrawal headaches. I then started drinking just 2 cups of coffee a day, no other caffeine at all day. I haven't had one of those headaches for 10 years.
Dr. Saper, Steve is not the only person for whom a change of diet has been helpful.
Well, that's right. And the caffeine's come up a couple times in this discussion. A little bit of caffeine can be therapeutic, much as Siri, I think, mentioned. But a lot of caffeine becomes toxic. And the more one drinks, the more one has withdrawal between dosages of the drug, caffeine. And so what we have here is a dichotomy. We have a little bit of caffeine can be therapeutic for a headache, sometimes even preventively. But if one takes beyond a certain amount, and it's probably different for different people, Neil, it's certainly more than a cup, but it could be as little as 3 or 4 cups of coffee, for example, a day, or cola, or many of the sodas that have a lot of caffeine. Once one reaches that threshold, then caffeine will drive the headache. And coming off is the only way to find ultimate relief. There are other dietary issues. I mean, everything from citrus in some people to milk in other people to cheeses in some people. Certainly some people can't eat gluten and have serious biochemical changes with that. So it is many, many different things for many different people, and that's part of why it's difficult to find help without a lot of time and a lot of attention from a competent physician.
Steve, good luck to you.
Thank you.
And finally, this email from Tom in Oakland. I've been a migraineur for nearly 15 years. I'm one of the lucky ones for whom medication works. Still, there's always that little bit of my mind that senses small headaches and worries. Is this the beginning of a migraine? It's that nagging little fear that I always carry with me, always, that is so tiresome. And I think he's not alone either. Dr. Saper, thank you very much for your time today.
You're welcome, Neil.
Joel Saper is the founder and director of the Michigan Head Pain and Neurological Institute and joins us today from the University of Michigan News Service. Whether your migraine trigger is a strong latte, a drop in barometric pressure, or soybeans, you can find some answers to your questions about migraines at our website, npr.org/talk. Coming up, from blogging migraines to blogging the war, Michael Yon has been writing dispatches from Iraq for most of the past 3 years. We'll talk to him from Baghdad next. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.